So Seth and I have talked about it. We're very fortunate to be able to talk with big leaguers on a daily basis, work with front offices in the MLB, you know, high-end colleges and coaches that are really changing the game. But for today, you know, a special Father's Day podcast, we really want to take a step back to those that actually got us started.
And real quick, shout out to all the moms out there. I know BP and I are both from God-fearing women who would jump out into the yard and throw a baseball with us too. But this week, with it being Father's Day, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking to both of our dads.
Hi, gang. I'm Seth's dad, Rollin. Golly, Ned, I've been in the ministry now almost 40 years. So you can imagine we spent some time with people, but we've had a great journey. Seth grew up as a preacher's kid.
Hi, everybody. Ben Page, BP also, I guess, if you will. So I'm a technology guy. I've been working in technology for 30 plus years. And when I wasn't doing technology, I was doing baseball.
BP and I spend so much time together, but we do a lot of kind of homework for these podcasts just to make sure, you know, when we talk to people that we kind of have our, you know, the background checks and everything going. So it was a little bit different approach this week. We did a little bit of a background check kind of on each other to explain maybe some of the things. And both of us were just talking a couple minutes before we started how crazy similar our backgrounds and stories were. But BP, I know that y'all have kind of a cool story, especially in your town with New Pal. With that, do you guys want to get into a little bit of what baseball was like for you guys growing up?
Yeah, for sure. I mentioned it before, but we're from New Palestine, which is a little baseball town outside Indianapolis. Really a lot of that talent and player development, I think, starts in the youth league. It's one of those towns that really gets all the guys, girls out to the diamond for baseball and softball. And Dad is actually how you were president for that, the MPYL, for quite pretty much most of my childhood.
I was over there for about 15 years. Of that 15 years, 5 years as president of the Little League, and pretty much held every position. It was a good time. We had one of the best organizations in the state of Indiana, hosting all-star tournaments and everything that we did, bringing travel ball into the program over the years. We had about 800 kids, and it was a good time.
We mentioned like the travel ball. And I actually, Dad had started up one of those teams, and I had a chance to name it. And I guess I would have been first, second grade at that time.
Yeah, probably.
And I just always thought like fire and baseball was cool. So I was always drawing fire on baseballs, you know, in school and all that stuff. But I was like, Dad, we have to name it the Blaze. So we had the sweet pinstripe jerseys and all that. But that is definitely one of my favorite memories, getting the Blaze started.
Yeah, Brian was 8 at the time. And here he is now, 26 or so. And the Blaze is still going strong.
That's cool.
We had something kind of similar. I know that we both sort of talked, and I was talking with Dad ahead of time before this, and it's just so crazy how much baseball's changed, and you talk about having travel ball teams and that sort of thing. We grew up, I mean, geez, maybe a mile from our Little League sort of station. That's kind of like where I grew up, really, in a lot of places. That's where it was called Hardscrabble right there. And, man, we from the time I was in T-ball all the way – get into to play high school, that was just what it was. There really wasn't a bunch of travel ball organizations or anything around, and Dad was kind of able to coach me through that time. But you know, Raw, what do you think of when you think back to the Hardscrabble days?
Honestly, I felt like we grew up in Mayberry. I mean, I remember the opening day parade and people, I mean, hundreds of people would line those streets, man, throwing candy and all this kind of stuff. And then we'd go down to the ball field, and it was a major thing then, you know, when you celebrated the opening day and all of the teams would fill the fields. And we'd have a speaker and share and just something, you know, really, really a cool day. And, you know, I'm like, man, I miss that. You miss those moments because they're – yeah. Even the relationships that you built, Seth will tell you this, we still hear from those kids. I mean, I still get Facebook stuff from them. It was a special season of life. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of looking back on the youth league days, one thing we always tried to do a really good job of was not missing any games and like weather delays. So I don't know how many bags of Diamond Dry we'd lug over to you. But there's this one specific memory that like a lot of it, like, so like learning to rake the diamond, build the mound, clay it. But there was one day, so there's a sugar creek. It runs back behind some of the fields. And it had rained so much that the creek had connected to the parking lot and the concession stand. And we were picking up fish. Yeah. There's bluegill by the concession stand. But we still got the game ins that next day. We were able to get the fields playable and play the next day when we had fish at the concession stand.
I remember that. A lot of work on the diamonds, that's for sure.
Okay. Yeah, we would be down there at like on game day, as you would probably remember, we'd be down there right after sunrise. If it had rained, trying to, you know, push the water away, do anything we could, get the diamond dry. It was just crazy, man. And we were down there for hours and hours and hours working on those fields. And still, I mean, it was great because you were there with friends, so it was fun to do.
You know, then almost every single day after we get off school or whatnot, then we'd just jump in the car. We'd take our two buckets of balls. We'd go down and not hit. And then we'd take grounders. And then we'd do, I mean, it was just, that was just every day. And that was, you know, if we didn't do it, it wasn't a good day. That's for sure. It's just kind of what we grew up with. I think, too, when we talk about Father's Day, I know that, you know, we kind of sat down like, what are the things that we would want to touch on that we think are kind of universal and that's there? And really the idea of this sort of like bond that's there. And it's all parents, you know, moms, dads, et cetera. But that sort of bond between a dad and a son, and think about like, you know, early days of learning how to throw a ball, the mechanics of it, working in the backyard. I know BP y'all actually built a mound. We had sort of a little like valley area that we really started to air it out. And as dad got older, we started bouncing the ball rather than throwing them on a line and wearing them off shins and everything else. So there's some of those moments too, but it's just it's kind of cool to think about the, I mean, I can't even put into a number how many balls he threw me in BP or caught for me when I was pitching, or what that would look like. I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds of thousands. I can't even imagine what that number would be. And I'm sure a similar story for, you know, our listeners as well.
Yeah, we did that as well, Seth. We actually built a mound in the backyard, and Brian had a kind of a backdrop he pitched into. Probably the thing I remember the most was a lot of fun is we have an evergreen tree in the front yard. Just put Brian on the other side of it and throw pop-ups over the tree where he couldn't see me throwing them, and he'd try to go catch them. And we did that over and over.
You know what, Ben? My arm still feels that. I don't know about you, but I don't have the juice I once had. I'll tell you, I can throw about 10 balls today, and I can't even lift my arm the next day. That's the penalty we pay, but it's a great price to pay for a great reason.
Hey, well, at least you can get up to 10 balls. I don't
know. Yeah, I feel pretty good about that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, BP and I mentioned too, I think my first ever like home run and kids pitch, or whatever age or year that would have been, I hit one of those assistant coaches' windshields with that. And he's, you know, both Mike and Donnie are relatively, you know,
intense
in the pitch fields. Yeah. And I was scared to death to go talk to Mike afterwards and let it, you know, he saw it. He was out coaching first or something. And he came up to me afterwards, and I thought I was about to get, you know, near full from breaking their windshield. And it was the complete and utter opposite of that. And it was just a great hit, man. That was awesome. You hit every windshield I have. I don't care. It was a really cool moment for that. But that was a nerve wracking moment for a 9-year-old or whatever it was.
We had one of those stories as well. You know, Brian's brother is 4 years younger, and his grandmother was alive at the time. And so they parked in left field along the road. And one of Brian's first home runs was a nice hit down third base, cleared the fence and put a nice dent into my van. I was coaching third base, and obviously the coaches, I think he hit that van, you know, and I was president of the league. It's like, all right, it's okay, guys. It's my van, you know, so nothing to take care of. But yeah. It was kind of fun. And, you know, I didn't care. It was fun to see the home run, right? Because you're really excited. And
yeah, it's kind of funny because there's kind of in left field there, there's like a shaded area where you can get like a prime spot. And my brother, like dad mentioned, was pretty young at the time. And yeah, grandma was in there with him so that like the windows could be down and he could be in the shade relaxing and then just hitting a home run right off the side. And then that van always had that dent as a memory of the first home run.
That's right.
Yeah, we got a great story of a grandma. My mom and dad would come up from Mississippi every year, a couple of three times to watch the kids play. And this was early spring. And, you know, you have some cold games in Indiana in the springtime. And so my mom was already in her 80s and she's sitting in the car watching Seth play. And Seth was just entered high school baseball and he's up to bat and he hits his first home run in high school. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in the car with my mom, and all of a sudden she throws her door open and she's 80 years old. And here she goes, man. She's making her way behind home plate by the fence and she's yelling. And I know people are thinking, who is this old lady that's going crazy behind the plate? But she was so happy, so enthusiastic about this. And she's just yelling and yelling and screaming. And then Seth crosses home plate and he sees her. And I will never forget. They both looked at each other and smiled. That was a great moment, man. I mean, just one of those you'll cherish the rest of your life. My mom, she's pretty feisty, wasn't she, Jay?
Yeah, 4'11", 90 pounds. Yeah. Or whatever she was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. She was booking it to home plate, though. Oh, yeah. Man. Such a good moment.
You know, I just feel I have to believe that there's a bunch of common storylines that, you know, that we went through that obviously BP and I have in common. That there's other people that are out there, but some real funny stories that just come to mind too. But one of the crazy things is that, you know, like you had mentioned, BP, like my folks were there for every single game, except they were not there for the first home run I ever hit because they were out of town with that. And I never remember the phone call afterwards. They were almost upset that I hit one when they were gone. you did what? We were there.
Yeah, I had a really similar call. So, and it's like Father's Day, you know, week and all of that. So mom never missed a game as well. But I do have a younger brother that sometimes we would be opposite places in the state playing high school and college sports. So this was, I was in high school. Connor was probably playing high school tennis or maybe middle school tennis at the time. And one of my first high school home run, mom was not there. And I was thinking that dad may have been kind of just caught it at the, he never missed any part of the game ever, never missed a pitch, never missed an AB. But I know he's like concession stand or
hot dog sounded good.
So just kind of coming back, seeing me maybe like rounding the bases for my first high school home run. But it's like just ironic after being there for like all of those games, mom and dad both. But it was just funny that to make that call to mom after and dad kind of catching a glimpse of it.
I know that one of the ones I'll remember too is that we were getting ready to play in a big game and dad kind of had us all huddled in the dugouts and we had something dugouts. You know, I had to bring this one up.
Oh, you did.
We're sitting there and he's giving us his best kind of rah-rah, you know, we're going to go out there and really win as a big game, you know, as big of a game as a 12-year-old can get into, I guess. And we're doing that in the sunken dugouts and they're built for kids. I mean, they really are at this park. And he's doing it. He's going to lead us out on the charge. And he turns around and starts to run. He smokes his head right on the beam before he comes down. He's staggering around. All the kids are like, do we run out? Do we check on the phone? What's going on? It was hilarious. I'm probably not for you at the time, but it was really funny for me.
It wasn't funny for me at the time. It really knocked me to my knees. But it's so funny. I gave this rah-rah speech. And then all these 10, 11, and 12-year-old boys, they just go by me and they patted me on the shoulder. They were so sorry for me that they would just gently pat me on the shoulder. Oh, it was so funny. After it was over, it was really funny.
I know, too. Obviously, it's a baseball podcast and we're working with Rep Soto. But I know BP from Indiana, you obviously grew up playing basketball as well. Me from Ohio, grew up playing football. And dad played football, too. I think one of the funny stories I remember is peewee football. Because I mean, from the time I was able to walk, I was playing football inside of that. And dad was a quarterback growing up. And I always thought that I was going to be a quarterback because I could throw a football too. And we went to peewee tryouts. And I know this is a podcast. You can't exactly see me. But those that know me know I'm not exactly what you look at a prototypical quarterback size. And I went there and I tried out and I got my jersey. And I was juiced, man. I thought, this is it. I'm QB1. We're going. And he had to tell me, buddy, I don't think they give number 57 to quarterbacks. We immediately turned from throwing the football like that to then also working on blocks and doing that sort of thing. I think that's kind of the cool thing, too. I didn't think about it at the time, but you know, I do now. Like, you didn't know anything about offensive line or defensive line or any of that sort of stuff. But that was one of the cool things that, you know, he knew I wasn't going to be him. I'm very different than him on that side, but very quickly turned out to, you know, how can I make you better and what do you want to do with that? So I got to appreciate that one. And the same thing on, you know, you weren't a pitcher either, but we did the best we could to try to figure that one out. But there's, you know, it's just kind of interesting all the stuff that we have at our disposal now that we think, man, using Rep Soto or something like that, can you imagine what that could have done when we were a kid growing up? So it's kind of a cool thing that we get to bring to kids and their dads now.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned it is a baseball podcast, but I think a common theme that is getting players involved in different sports. I believe, you know, Miles talked about in this pandemic, like do different things to like stay in shape. I think Calix talked about getting involved in different sports to build out an athlete. And that was one thing we definitely did is like, so dad played basketball, baseball, softball. But one thing we didn't know much about was soccer. But when I got started, dad coached the team and he actually he's trying to learn the rules on the sideline he didn't know the game as well, but always like putting that foot forward to like coach in anything.
I go to the meeting, right? And I come home from the meeting, and Brian is, "Dad, who's my coach? Who's my coach?" I said, "Well, I am, bud. I'm your coach." "No, really, who's my coach?" They had given me material at the meeting, and I had not planned on being the coach. And he's looked at mom and says, "Oh, great, he's got a book." We went undefeated. We did great. Yeah.
Well, I'd say better than okay. Undefeated is not bad.
That's pretty good. Somebody needs to read your book. That's for sure. Hey, listen, I agree with y'all. I think it's so important that kids do play different sports. I just think it develops different muscle groups. I think it develops different cognitive skills. I mean, every position you play causes you to think differently. And the other thing is, you know what? You never know what sport you're really going to excel in until you grow and mature into it. I mean, if you look at Seth, 6'4" or something, you think football is going to be his sport. But what we didn't know was his mental frame made him a pitcher because he enjoyed those moments. And, you know, that's what I think is so important for parents, to not pigeonhole kids, because sometimes we do it because that's the way we were. And they're just not going to be who you were. So I think this is such an important thing. And I mean, I think of Ben going out, reading a book so he could learn how to do that. I mean, I think that's what parents do. I think they put themselves maybe in an uncomfortable position so they can help their kids just grow as people. And that's something that I admire immensely. Ben, I still know nothing about soccer, although I have a granddaughter now who plays it. And the only thing I can yell to her is, "Kick it, Ray, kick it." That's the epitome of my soccer knowledge right there.
Yeah, I feel that in a big way, Ben, when we talk about Ray starting to play soccer. And man, that's, you know, in Ohio, it's kind of football or soccer, and everybody leads pretty heavy over to football. And that was, you know, as news to me. I didn't know any of the rules. And thankfully, at her age, it's just kind of swarm ball anyways, and all the kids just run around. So I can cheer for that one. But as we get older, we're going to have to do a little bit of research, I think.
Yeah, we're pretty heavy in basketball, like you mentioned, Seth. It is Indiana. It's a Hoosier State. It's a lot about basketball.
I've seen your jumper. I know.
I think I would put Dad up there as one of the biggest ABA Pacers fans out there. Knows everything about it.
Yeah, it was the Pacers, the ABA days with Freddie Lewis and George McGinnis and all those guys, and then the Big Red Machine. You know, I wasn't a Cubs fan where they, you know, everybody's a Cubs fan, right? And not winning. But heck, in my day, I was disappointed if they didn't win, right? Because you had, you know, Joe Morgan and Concepcion and, of course, Johnny Bench and, you know, Pete Rose and the gang, right? And I remember they always opened the season, Major League Baseball. They were the first game of the season. It was a day game. Because I remember I used to get in trouble because I always skipped school because you couldn't count on the games being on TV back then, right? But you always got that opening day game, and you got to see the Big Red Machine in action, and then hopefully to the World Series. So I was lucky growing up with baseball and, you know, what we did back then. So it was a lot of fun.
I kind of had the same thing. You know, Dad, growing up in Mississippi, about the closest team down there is going to be the Braves. So, you know, he was a Braves fan, so I was a Braves fan. And then we grew up in kind of the Maddox and Smoltz and Glavin and those sort of years. And I mean, I just, you know, I assumed you're supposed to win the pennant. That's what my team did.
Yeah, we found out the hard way.
Things turned a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, they're moving ahead. We're going the right direction.
Hey, Karen, wasn't he a
player? Oh, yeah. In fact, we used to go over, this was before Smoltz and Glavin and Maddox and Avery came on the scene. And honestly, Ben, back then, you could go for a weekend game, you could sit anywhere in the stadium. There just weren't that many people.
Okay.
And, you know, Hank Aaron, honestly, I remember going over and watching Willie Mays and Willie McCovey. I even got to meet them one time.
Nice.
Doing that. So, man, we are just huge Braves fans. And, you know, that isn't that a fun thing to pass down, Ben, to your children, your love for them? And then, you know, now Ty and Seth love the Braves, and we try to get to a game. I try to go to a spring training game every year. It just, you know, it's just fun to pass along something that you love like that and to watch that tradition. And Raylan May, our granddaughter, already knows how to go Bravos.
Any sort of organized cheer activity like that, she's all about. The wave, you know,
oh my gosh. Braves,
you know, go Big Blue for the Colts. I mean, she's all about it. Yeah.
One thing I try to do is get to every single stadium, and a lot of that's been with Dad to different ballparks. But one thing that always stands out is the Braves, and when it gets late innings and you do the whole stadium's got the chop going, I think that's probably one of the coolest atmospheres that I've experienced from different games. That's always pretty cool with what they do down there. It's definitely obviously one of the best fan bases.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, we, you and I have talked to BP that we have some of these moments that we kind of take for granted with Rapsodo. I'm kind of bringing it back to that, and that, you know, you getting to meet with the Reds or me getting to meet with the Braves, and that's, you know, there's not been too many of those times out there that I've kind of fanboyed out and done that just because it's our job and that's what we do. We meet with these people and it is what it is. But, you know, that's one of those things that that kind of takes you back to growing up and having a dad be a Braves fan, that the moment I got in the car after meeting with them and having Bobby Cox in the meeting and Chipper and all these guys, and I go up and meet in their, you know, their clubhouse and get to see just everybody who's a part of the organization. It was really cool. And, you know, he was the first phone call after that. And I mean, that's dads in baseball, right? I mean, it was one of those things like, you know, you're never going to believe who I just met with. I mean, that's one of those things that'll go forever. I'll remember that moment.
But like, I had a pretty similar experience as well. Like Seth said, it's sometimes it's like stepping back and the people you get to interact with. But one of the times I know I gave dad a call right away was I was down at an event for, we work with a lot of the D-bats, and Pete Rose was there. So I got a chance to meet Pete Rose. And I know the first calls with dad, you're not going to believe that, got a chance to, you know, shake Pete Rose's hand and just say, hey, that's pretty awesome.
Well, and interesting, he tells me he's playing cards with Billy Martin. But Billy Martin, he's got to be gone by now. That's just, oh, that can't be Billy Martin. It turned out, of course, it was Billy Martin Jr.
That's cool. So cool, though. I mean, I'll never forget that phone call. I mean, never. I'll never forget that phone call that day. And just the elation for both of us. I mean, I was literally living through Seth at that point, you know, just saying, holy cow, man, what a great day. What a great day. What a great moment.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think one of my favorite stories, this is right before I joined on. I got with Rapsodo pretty early. But with Seth telling the story of needing some help at ABCA,
yeah, you know, that was such a turning point for the company, but also, you know, it was a real like stressor for me because, you know, we had this budget of nothing and we spent every dime from Batu to like build this like very basic plain event space and really advocate for it because, you know, Batu and the guys in Singapore, but like they don't know about ABCA because they're not over here. And so, you know, we knew what it was and what it could be. And so it's a huge expense for a company that's never sold, you know, any of their products to say, I'm going to rent this 70-foot booth at a place. And so it took a lot of, you know, one, us kind of begging and pleading, saying this is what we need to do. But also to Batu's credit, him giving us the green light to say, if you think this is important, let's do it. Let's do it right. So I'll fly in for it. We'll bring in the head engineer. But I started looking at the guest list and I'm like, buddy, this is going to be interesting with how many coaches are there. And I was just talking with him saying, you know, hey, I don't know how I'm going to handle this all by myself because you got Batu trying to talk baseball to people. And that's not what I want to have happen. So, you know, what are we going to do? And at that point in time, he was flexible enough to be able to spend a couple of days to come down and we talked ahead of time and said, right now you're not my dad, Rollin Daniels, you're Rapsodo employee, Rollin. And we just went out and we put the preacher to work and he went out and said, hey, let me tell you something about Rapsodo. Come on down.
He gave me a shirt. This is the truth. He gave me a shirt, said, I don't know if it's your size, but you're going to wear it. And so we wore the shirt. And honestly, I had the time of my life because all I had to do was greet people. Nice. And then if they asked technical questions, I'd say, you know what? You need to talk to Seth. And I'd take him over to Seth and we'd go on. And that was, I still remember the enthusiasm that you saw build because at first nobody knew who they were. And then Driveline came over and man, they were so excited and they bring one of their guys over to throw in that batting cage that we made. And all of a sudden there was a crowd around the whole place. And it was like, oh my goodness, something's happening here. And that was the beginning. I mean, it was the beginning and I felt really privileged to be able to share it with Seth because we had so much fun. I mean, so much fun.
Yeah. Fast forward to in our own town of Indy, a couple years later, when obviously BP was on board and Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, that was probably the first time you were able to come down and see it in person during that event.
Yeah, all right, downtown Indy. Yeah,
yeah. It was, you know, Dad got to see what it was 3 years prior and then what it was now and then for us to see that. And that was really, BP and I have mentioned, I think even on this podcast, one of our big turning points from a company standpoint, just being able to see, okay, something's different this year. You know, the people know who we are. It's not Rapsodo Who, but you know, people seeking us out. That was pretty cool.
And, you know, the other thing I'm really jealous with Brian is a lot of people, you know, they work to live, right? Brian lives to work, you know. Rap Soto is awesome. He loves his job, and just seeing him move on and still be a part of baseball is, you know, pretty awesome for me.
They're a part of something that's changing the game. And it's amazing to me to think about that. I mean, how long we've loved this ball, this game, this crazy game. And at its core, it's still just baseball with all its nuances and everything wonderful about it. But to watch all of this happen and to watch the transformation that's taking place in the game is really, I think that moves me deeply, that they have this kind of impact and influence. And I know they don't take it for granted. I'm much more proud of who they are as men.
Sure.
Because I watch how they handle their business and how they have integrity and how they have character. And I think it's out of their deep love for the game that I hope Ben and I have instilled in some ways, that I think that love for the game causes them to almost have a reverence for what they do and an appreciation for what they do. And because they've grown up to be the people they are, I'm going to be honest with you. Do I miss the other part? Man, yeah. I miss those moments when they were kids and young men. But now I get greater joy, honestly, greater joy out of watching who they are now and who they've grown up to be.
And I have kind of, when we're talking about our proud moments from us hitting home runs and stuff, we have kind of proud son moments as well with that. And speaking of fathers, it kind of works really appropriately. And he's probably going to shoot me for doing this, but Dad actually just wrote a book, kind of around father and son. So Legacy Maker is the name of that second book that he's had come out, which obviously is pretty cool to say that. But this guy's like literally launching right now and deals with a bunch of these life lessons. He mentioned pops and my grandpa and stuff that he taught him along the way, and kind of fathers and son moments around that. So we'll, you know, it's one of those things. Raw, I know, again, you're probably not going to be thrilled that I'm doing this, but why don't you just explain that just quickly, just so people know what it's like. I think it's a good, very kind of on topic point to bring up.
Yeah, especially in Father's Day. It's, you know, my dad was this really good man who just taught so much about life to us, and so much I've tried to pass down to Seth. And you know, I kept telling Ellen these stories, my wife, and she said, "Roland, you need to write this stuff. You just need to write it so Seth and Tyler can read it and learn from it." And so we started this, and then over 5 years, it turned into a book, and went and got it published, and it's just come out. I mean, it has just come out in the last week, and it's called Legacy Maker, Live a Life That Matters. And so it's been a pleasure and a privilege, but you know, I'm more proud of the story of who it is and who it was about. And I think the book will do good. And for that, I'm grateful, but that's the reason it was, and that's the intent it was written with, so that we could learn some simple life lessons that make a huge difference in life. And so, yeah, thanks. Legacy Maker. And you can order it even at my name, RolandDaniels.com.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to check it out. Yeah, that is really awesome.
That's an awesome story. Sure.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like a cliche country music song when you think about my grandpa taught me how to cuss and how to pray. that was him.
That was Pops.
There's a good story to bring up. How jealous on the Garth Brooks, because I know this is actually a funny story, because I was in Arizona with a team that had some more questions. It was more of a meeting where it's more of a long day. I could kind of just say that. And then I give Seth the call. He's like, "Dude, you're not going to believe it. I just met Garth."
That was strategic on my part, Brian. You didn't know that. Yeah.
"Hey, Brian, I got a call that day too, but he was still on the field that day." He said, "Dad, you're not going to believe who's standing beside me." And I was like, "Holy cow, Sepher."
Yeah, that was a weird one. Normally when we're there, it's so like everybody's business, and it's just very like, you walk here, you do this, you're with the team. You're not doing anything else. They tell you where to go. They tell you what to do, tell you when to eat. I mean, you feel like you're a part of their organization, that they've just let you in and you go there. And this one, I guess just since he was there, I don't know what else to say about it, but it was just like, everyone was just kind of fans. The front office is out just like hanging out, watching BP, like just enjoying the day. It was a weird feel to it. It was awesome. I mean, cause it had that, you know, just back to baseball sort of feel, but everybody's out there watching them take hacks and do that. It's just kind of cool just to see everybody get back to, you know, it's just cool to watch BP at the end of the day. So that was a neat moment.
It's just neat to think back and about all the moments that we've all shared And I really mean this because as dads, Ben and I share that and the reality of how special those times were. And like you said, you know, parenting is all about showing up, man. There is nothing that beats the power of presence, right? Nothing. And I think Ben and I are the ones who are benefited most from it.
Yeah.
Because of the relationships we have with our sons. And for that, I am immensely grateful.
That's well said. You know, my wife used to always say, hey, it goes quick. Don't miss it.
And yeah.
Right. It does go quick.
Yeah. One thing that I've been thankful for is, so I grew up in the travel ball era. So like, as I was coming through, we went from like more of like a youth league travel ball team that traveled around the state of Indiana. So like, we're going to Arkansas, we're going to Florida, Georgia. And obviously there's a lot of like expenses involved with that. You know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, it's the same things with their sons, is that it is an investment and it's not cheap at all by any means to get your players seen nowadays, to get in the right tournaments, academies, showcases, and so on. So that was one thing I was always grateful that, you know, now that baseball has changed a little bit where we think back on the great youth league days, but now it's, you know, a lot of players are going around the country to be seen. That's one thing I was always thankful that mom and dad made happen for me.
Yeah, I think that's well put, BP. It's a different time right now than what dad mentioned, Mayberry growing up at the corner, you know, and riding our bikes down to the field and being a part of that. It's just different, which in some ways is – you know, I feel sad for people that they don't get to have that. In other ways, I understand the opportunities that they get going around and traveling. So, you know, I think it just kind of whatever meets their needs around that. Little leagues are still out there and doing well. So shout out to those guys. But, you know, in general, just, you know, Ben and Dad, just thank you guys for coming on. This is a special day for BP and I to have a part of that. And hopefully the listeners are going to get something out of it and, again, be able to resonate with a little bit on their side. But it's just been cool to have this experience. Thank you guys for everything you've done for us. And internally, everything that, you know, hopefully we're able to kind of continue to pass along down there. But thank you guys for showing up and we appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jay. I love you, son.
You too. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of that and really just letting BP and I guess, take a stroll down memory lane for a little bit. Man, we just hope, honestly, that some of this just kind of resonates with you guys. We know there's so many players and former players that are out there that are listeners. And man, we just appreciate the opportunity to kind of talk a little bit about our experiences with our own dads. And hopefully, you know, some of that message kind of hits home with y'all and can be similar sort of stories that you went through. And maybe it inspires you to give your dad a call and talk about your favorite, you know, memory that you had with him when you were playing or growing up. And I know BP touched on it earlier, and I think it's so appropriate. When what we're celebrating here doesn't have to be your biological father. There's a lot of different ways to be a father figure and show up in somebody's life. So whether that's, you know, the person that plays that role for you, that's in there teaching about sports and life lessons and that sort of bond that gets created, we think there's a similar message that can go around to everybody. So we appreciate you guys joining us and appreciate you being here with us. It was awesome to kind of get to spend some time with you guys and really look forward to hearing you. Hearing the feedback, and hopefully you guys can continue to reach out and be a part of this. So keep sending over your Twitter questions, hashtag RapsodoPodcast, and we look forward to bringing more episodes to you guys in the near future. So thanks again. See you guys later.